Well?
Well?
Appleby's End. I think we might begin with that. Is there a story of Ranulph's called Appleby's End?
Yes. The place had that name before there was a railway station. And I suppose it caught his eye.
I see. And is it about a man who is invited to stay at a strange house with sinister consequences?
He doesn't get married. But sinister is the word. Spooky doings in long, gusty corridors, with the carpets rising on the floors and the ivy tapping on the window panes, and madness ending all.
You're not mildly apprehensive? You don't mind being tied for life to a madman?
I'm not apprehensive.
Perhaps you should be. You remember you told me that you have a compact with Mark not to tell each other fibs? Is that going to apply to me?
Yes.
Then don't you think you ought to tell me...
I'm marrying you for your wits. Partly. I expect to see you work it out for yourself. And I don't need to tell you either fibs or otherwise. I can just keep mum.
But can you keep mum, for instance, about last night?
The hey-ho business. Well, I did find it rather macabre.
And disconcerting in that it didn't hitch onto any Ranulph story.
Quite.
I've discovered it hitches onto what might well be a Ranulph story. Only he doesn't seem to have written it. Billy Bider...
Ranulph did write it. Only it was never published. Everard told me this morning. Well, what do you make of the whole business?
It's the work of an artist, and therefore quite probably of somebody with raven blood. Perhaps of somebody interested in dreams, because brought up at a place called Dream. For dreams, you know, use whatever is lying about. A man called Appleby in a place called Appleby's End, there's pure dream material in that, and it's not been missed. Only, of course, this is a thoroughly practical and business-like dream. Or was meant to be.
If I were marrying you for your wits, it looks as if I should be getting a bargain.
Hey-ho dies, and his body is found lying in some lane. The dream artificer promptly exploits the fact, and there he overreaches himself, because in England you can't do that with a body, however dead, and get away with it.
Yes?
I am sorry to disturb you, Miss Judith, but Mr. Everard has asked me to tell you there will be guests for dinner.
Guests?
They arrived without warning, Miss Judith. Mr. Everard was quite put out.
Well, who are they?
Mr. Scott.
Ralph Raven's publisher.
And Mr. Little.
A news editor of the Blair. Well, well, and all for Hannah Hoobin's boy.
And there's a young constable downstairs, Mr. Appleby. He asked me to give you this.
Someone has put the pins to Woolworth. Woolworth?
Starrock's prize bull. I understand that a clay model of the animal was found in his straw, stuck with pins.
This is serious, and I think the matter should be communicated in the discreetest possible manner to the gentlemen of the press outside. Will you arrange that, Rainbird?
Certainly, sir.
Witchcraft? But it just doesn't fit in or make sense. It's got nothing to do with us. And why should you be so keen to go and...
I'll let you puzzle out that one. We have two jobs ahead of us this evening.
Two? I should have thought one was enough.
Two. Getting to the heart of the mystery and getting away again. Come on. We'd better go into dinner.
The unfortunate man who died last night...
Hey-ho.
Just so. What manner of man was he?
Far from reliable. I could not conscientiously describe him as a valued servant.
His new situation is scarcely likely to be such that he will require a testimonial.
Of course, he was excellent with Spot, Mr. Scott. And with the two horses we had before Scott. Oh, I mean Spot. And with the four horses we had before the two horses we had before. Everett, I think it might be a good idea to keep four horses again. One would then have no hesitation in calling out the carriage.
None whatever.
And Bidewell might be put in livery.
Bidewell? Is that the fat young man who was lying asleep in the stables?
It has proved overexciting for him, Mr. Little.
And he's the one who has some knowledge of a piece of folklore about a head, which recalls the circumstances of Hayhoe's death?
Well, yes. It does appear...
And that... you have a Ranulph Raven story turning on the same circumstance, preserved in manuscript?
That is so. But just how...
And there may be something in this... A little. Don't you agree that is all absorbingly interesting?
Interesting to you and me, yes. I don't mind saying that I shall be uncommonly intrigued to hear the explanation of this echoing of the raven stories. But whether we could put it across in the Blair, well, that's another matter.
Put it across? Really, my dear little, I quite fail to understand you. Nothing would dismay us more than some horrible form of publicity.
Oh, it would be most repugnant to us.
Entirely contrary to our family tradition.
We should never hold our heads up again.
Oh, come, come. You must all please take a rational view of the affair. The public is bound to be interested.
I'm not so sure of that. Something very much simpler would have altogether more appeal. That's the opinion of those fellows camped on the lawn outside. It's got them guessing. So much so that they've agreed to hold everything till tomorrow.
Something simpler, did you say, Mr. Little? Have you heard of the sorcery hereabouts? It seems to have nothing to do with our affairs here at Dream, but you might be interested in it all the same.
Yes, I think that as we are squarely faced with our own untoward affairs, we should stick to them.
I quite agree. If Mr. Appleby would...
Sorcery! Mr. Appleby!
Less than an hour ago, I had a message from the local constabulary about an attempt to injure a prize bull by black magic. And then there's old Mrs. Ulster...
To get back to Ranulph Raven.
A bull,
eh? There's always a bit of appeal in a bull. Yes, that's an uncommonly interesting thing.
Interesting? It's quite stupid, if you ask me, and leads nowhere. Now, hey-ho...
Very definitely leads somewhere, but in just what direction? I'm not sure that it wouldn't be as well to leave him alone until we find out.
John, pray let Rainbird give you a little more pork.
A big pardon, sir. A big pardon, ma'am.
Well, Rainbird, what is it? What's the matter?
It was the pork, ma'am. It was Mr. Everard's naming the pork that made me feel I'd better mention it.
Mention it, Rainbird? What in the world are you talking about?
The witches, sir. They've been seen not an hour ago.
The witches? What witches, Rainbird, in heaven's name?
Why, ma'am, them as was a-trying to sorcerize old Mrs. Hulstrup and put the pins to Woolworth.
Oh, nonsense, my good fellow. These are simply old wives' tales that have been going round the district.
Beg pardon, sir, but Inspector Mutlow says that...
Inspector Mutlow, is he here again?
Oh, yes, sir. Waiting in the scriptorium, sir. And Inspector Mutlow says, sir, that the Lord Lieutenant was most emphatic.
The Lord Lieutenant?
Of the county, sir. He had arranged for a car to meet him at the junction, it appears. At Linger, that is. And seemingly it broke down in the snow. Whereupon, sir, his lordship was pleased to step into the waiting room, and there the witches was. A whole Sabbath of them.
A Sabbath?
Well, sir, at least three. There they was, sir, in Brettingham Skull's waiting room.
And what, Rainbird, were the witches doing in so disagreeable a retreat?
If you please, Miss Judith, they were killing swine.
I suppose, Rainbird, that the witches were provided with a cauldron.
I understand that they had something of the sort, sir.
And were they singing something like double, double?
Well, those are the very words, sir, the very words. Inspector Mutlow says his lordship noted them very particular. But no sooner had his lordship entered the waiting room than the witches ran out shrieking and disappeared, and there was nothing left but the carcass of one of Skull's plaster old spots.
Do you mean to say that a nobleman of the county is actually prepared to swear that he has had an interview with witches? What's all that noise?
That would be the gentleman of the press outside, sir. They're all driving off to Linger.
Where's my hat? Find my coat! There hasn't been a story like this.
My dear fellow, pray compose yourself.
Have another glass of claret.
Wait for the port.
And the brandy.
Keep her out! Oh, keep her out! Oh, she's followed me right to the spinny.
William? It is William, isn't it? Gregory Groat's assistant?
Yes, sir.
Whatever is the meaning of this? And what has been following you?
Oh, please, sir. It was the witch, sir. Followed me right up the kitchen door, she did. A waving and a screeching like anything. Oh, I thought I was a sure goner.
I see. And I suppose she had her broomstick?
Oh, yes, sir. Her hat and broomstick, sir. And she carried a great big brindled cat. Oh, that'd be how I knew she was a witch.
Witches? Your whole countryside teeming with them. Stealing cake, the witching bulls, killing pigs, pursuing country boys. By heaven, it's the greatest thing in the country. Tell them to hold the fence.
But what about my tombstone? Sir Mulberry Farmer's Bible, Wilcox.
Judith Blind Man.
Hey, hell, and the hollering hey.
Come back! Come back! Oh, we didn't tell you the best one of all. Appleby Day! Appleby Day!
A frost. An absolute frost. Scott doubtless will do all he can, but I've no doubt as to the outcome. An absolute frost.
A frost, Everard? As a lexicographer, you ought to speak more accurately. What you mean is a close shave. But I think there's a visitor coming. I wonder, will he make up for Liddell's departure?
Ah, it's the rector.
And carrying a cat.
No!
Good evening. Is the hour too unseasonable for a visit?
Oh, not at all, my dear Smith, not at all. We're all delighted to see you at any time. You're on your way home from your pastoral cares.
Precisely so. My evening activities could scarcely be better put. Rainbird, be so good as to take my Gladstone bag, and I wonder if... Bless my soul, what ails the boy?
Brindle cat.
William has just seen a witch, and as it happens, she appears to have had a cat much like Hodge.
Oh, dear me. William, do you think this was the witch's cat?
No. Oh, no, Mr. Smith.
Ah, well, well. There you are, Rainbird. And I wonder if I might ask Peggy Pitches to give Hodge a saucer of milk.
Of course, my dear fellow, of course. Let us all retire to the scriptorium. Rainbird can bring us coffee. We may make quite a snug evening of it.
In conversation with Inspector Mutlow.
Oh, dear me, I'd quite forgotten him. But John, I'm sure, will be able to manage all that.
Yes, I think it would be wise to leave it to me. And to Mr. Smith.
Smith? Well, I can hardly see that I...
We must all regard ourselves as hares.
Hmm?
Little hunted hares. And Mutlow is a whole pack of beagles in full cry. And Mr. Smith here, and his two sons, if I'm not mistaken, are fellow hares who have been obliging enough to cross the scent.
Ah.
But the situation is critical still. Now, come along. Mutlow, it was good of you to come over again, but I really don't know that you ought to have spared the time. This is a bad business that has started up around you.
It certainly is. When once country folk get imagining things about witches...
Quite so. And the trouble is, you can never be quite sure that there isn't something in it. Anyway, you'll certainly be preoccupied with it all, so it's a good thing that the Tiffin Place and Hayhoe affairs have been cleared up.
Cleared up? I haven't heard of that now, Mr. Appleby.
Well, virtually cleared up. I hope you won't go away quite yet, for we really need your help in talking the matter out.
Well, you must have a brandy. Robert, bring a rummer.
And a cigar.
Oh.
Don't hesitate. Pick and choose.
Oh.
Sugar, Mr. Mutlow.
Oh.
So intelligent of Rainbird. Your supply of coffee. Oh, most reliable man.
I have to explain to you all that this afternoon Inspector Mutlow made a most penetrating analysis of the case. As a result of which, we have been able to draw the whole affair together.
Mm.
I am sure none of you will want us to mince matters. It will be best that we have the whole truth at once.
I really think that the presence of the family solicitor...
No, no, not at all. Let us have the whole truth at once, by all means.
Very well. The truth is this. Inspector Mutlow found very good reason for the darkest suspicions against this whole family. The death of old Mrs. Grote, followed by that of Hayhoe, as also by some obscure plot against the unfortunate youth known as Hannah Hoobin's boy.
Old Mrs. Grote?
The woman who is thought to have fallen down a well.
Ah, yes, sir. Yes, yes.
Certain circumstances, family circumstances, into which, at the moment I need not enter, made it advantageous to you, Everard, and to the family in general, that first this old Mrs. Grote, and then Hayhoe, and then the boy should be, well... liquidated.
Good heavens.
Liquidated?
This is very serious.
Quite so. It appeared that the two crimes and one obscure attempt at a crime might be charged against you all. But then another possibility struck the inspector. A little more brandy?
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Mutlow saw that it was more probably, indeed, almost certainly, the old man Hayhoe himself who was at the center of the whole thing.
Did I? Well, I suppose I did.
And that the burying of Hayhoe in the snow was poetic justice.
Poetic justice? Boiling oil would have been poetic justice for that old wretch.
Really, Clarissa, have a cigar. Pray take another cup of coffee.
For when we reviewed the whole run of the case, we found in some fantastic way everything led back to Ranulph Raven and his books. It was almost as if someone was playing a spotlight on them. Now, if the family circumstances to which I have alluded were as we believed, it would be utterly against your interest as a family to have any attention drawn to Ranulph. On the contrary, it would be in your interest to keep Ranulph well buried. With Hayhoe, however, just the reverse held. It was to his advantage, or so he suspected, that the widest notoriety should be given to Ranulph in his biography. And with the cunning of a half-educated, half-senile, but extremely formidable old man, he took the extraordinary way to it that he did. Queer things began to happen which would be bound very soon to unearth the whole Ranulph Raven legend. The newspapers would be sure to take it up, and from right back in the last century, his whole early history would be laid bare. I think I have more or less done justice, Mutlow, to this series of deductions by which you have solved this case.
Oh, certainly. I think you put it very well. Very well indeed, Appleby.
And so there is the truth of the whole matter. And fortunately, there is now really no criminal case to pursue. I say fortunately because this extraordinary and very serious affair of witchcraft is likely to occupy all the inspector's energies for some time. Oh. I'm sure that you will all agree that his handling of it is likely to be such that he will gain the greatest credit.
Oh, certainly. When Inspector Mutler runs the Weird Sisters to earth, his career will most assuredly be made.
Huh. Well, I suppose I certainly do want to get onto this witchcraft and sorcery business. And now that everything has been cleared up...
Thank God for that.
No, it hasn't. What about that poetic justice? What about the body in the snow? You found out that the old man was up to some devilry. You found him out, some or all of you, and you hoist him with his own...
My dear officer, if you would only consider...
Another cigar.
Have some more brandy.
Mutlow, that is the one particular in which you went wrong. And I don't doubt that it was my fault. I got carried away with the idea of poetic justice and overlooked the vital figure in the drama. Spot.
Spot, Mr. Appleby?
Yes, indeed. For consider the situation. Here is Hayhoe wandering round in the snow with a bottle of gin in one hand and Spot's bridle in the other. He sits down, still clutching the brute. He drinks, falls into a stupor. Very presently, he is dead. But still he is clutching Spot's bridle. And I suppose you know what a dead man's clasp can be like. The horse bolts, terrified, and drags, but drags the body right into a snowdrift and is pulled up short. He rears and prances in a panic, scattering snow everywhere, obliterating his own traces. Something snaps or slips, and he makes for home. And there is Hayhoe's body, tugged with the animal's full might into a snowdrift.
And you really suppose that this was the manner of Hayhoe's end?
What do you think, Mutlow?
Well, there's not a doubt of it. And it shows how careful one should be about testing one's hypothesis. I'm not sure it wasn't you yourself, Mr. Appleby, who was a bit hasty there.
Oh, undoubtedly it was.
Yes, now, what I've always said...
Dear me, what an extraordinary din.
It's the witches. They're not a quarter of a mile off.
Witches? Sounds more like...
It's the witches. I must go.
Oh, won't you stop for another brandy? Put a few cigars in your pockets. Oh, dear me. The man's gone.
Now perhaps you understand, Everard, what I meant by a close shave. Let us hope the inspector will not have any second thoughts.
I think the witches will occupy all his energies.
I trust they will. Now let us turn to the real motive. Publicity for Ranulph Raven and his works, or shall I say, the cannibal instinct of the Ravens?
Cannibal?
You'd have no luck with the waxworks or Theodore's marbles, and the library shelves were virtually empty. There remained only Ranulph's novels. Was it conceivable that the long-since-defunct reputation of Ranulph could be profitably revived? He would be copyright still for a few years, and there was a certain amount of unpublished material.
7 trunkfuls of it.
But on their own merits, Ranulph's books would never rise again. It was a sensation that was needed. Something that would be written up lavishly in popular papers and create an interest in this forgotten writer that clever editors and publishers would exploit. So you started with the little affair of the coach of Cacus, a mere trial run to see what you could do. You tried to cause a stir over Luke's tombstone, but his solicitor put a stop to that one. But your really determined attempt was over the Medusa head. Here was all this marble of Theodore's lying about, and nobody so much as willing to make a tile out of it. And here on the shelf was a yarn of Ranulph's in which all sorts of creatures were mysteriously turned to stone. And so the campaign against the farmers of Tiffin Place was launched. But on this occasion, you had the most wretched luck. Although you had arranged for reporters to be on the scene in no time, the farmers were strongly opposed to publicity. And as it happened, they both had a strong pull with the Banner and the Blair.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Whereupon you went so far as to persuade the Hoobins, who were both a shade simple, to get their boy away from Tiffin Place and hide him. And you replaced him with one of Adolphus's waxworks. But again, nothing much happened, because Mutlow did very little to find out what had happened to the Hoobin boy. And this was the state of affairs when I had the good fortune to meet Everard on the train.
But it was too good an opportunity to let slip, don't you see? There was this newspaper on the carriage floor identifying you to all the world as Appleby of the Yard. There was a station at Appleby's End, and there was Ranulph's story.
But what did you intend to do with me?
Well, I had nothing clearly formulated in my mind. I was improvising. But subsequent events, my dear John, drove your possibilities quite out of my head.
No doubt. And it's to the subsequent events that we now come. When Judith and I were separated from the rest of you by the accident at the Ford, she was left with rather a tricky problem. I was an Appleby and a Scotland Yard detective. How did I fit in? Was I spying upon the whole plan, or was I an innocent instrument of Everard's? She chose to pump me full of Ranulph mystery, and was more communicative about her family than such a well-bred young person would naturally be. It was odd.
I am not a well-bred young person. You might be speaking of one of Lady Farmer's beastly dogs.
Judith, if your manners made an adequate impression upon this young man, that is surely one satisfactory aspect of this deplorable affair. And never forget, child, that even an artist may be a gentlewoman.
Yes, Aunt.
And now for Hayo. The accident had given him a shock, and he abandoned Spot and wandered off with his bottle of gin in the snow. The rest of you separated to look for us, and each made your own way independently. So the next adventure was Everard's alone. And I think, indeed, that he kept his own counsel for the rest of the night.
Oh, dear. Smith, you will not like this. You will not like this at all. What John says is quite correct. I came upon Hayhoe's body quite by chance, and suddenly there came into my mind an old unpublished story of Ranulph's about a gentleman who used to take earth baths in his spinney. I don't know what came over me.
Everard has always been of a sanguine disposition, with a genius for making the best of things. He simply made the best of poor old Hayhoe.
No doubt. And now your plan was fairly launched at last. Within 12 hours, it was showing every sign of presently becoming a national sensation. Unfortunately, this ghost of Ranulph's that you had summoned from the grave was likely to prove a very Frankenstein. And the reason for this lay in the family circumstances which Mutlow and I became possessed of this afternoon.
Tell us. Let us hear the worst. What can these mysterious family circumstances be?
And I can explain in very few words. I scarcely need to remind you that Ranulph was not among the more reputable of the Ravens. He had numerous illegitimate children. Hayhoe was your half-brother, Everard, just as he was a sort of half-uncle to Mark and Judith and a cousin to Miss Clarissa. Now, you may remember me asking if Hayhoe was older than the rest of you, and you declared he was. The point of the question you will realize at once if I ask you another. Are you really certain that Hayhoe was illegitimate?
Hayhoe?
Hayhoe's mother became, or thought she became, a Mrs. Grope. But I'm afraid we shall find that Ranulph Raven, perhaps for some eccentric delight in the possible consequences that might result long after, had contracted a previous marriage with her. And this means that Hayhoe was your father's only legitimate child.
Hayhoe? And when you remember that this same old Mrs. Grote met her death in a way which could well be given a sinister interpretation, you will see what danger Everard was in when he was playing tricks with Heyho's body. But that's not all.
Not all?
Most unfortunately not. For just as Heyho is your father's legitimate son, so is the half-wit boy involved in your Tiffin Place plan Heyho's legitimate son. Or at least it seems probable that it was so.
You mean that these family circumstances, as you call them, are still purely conjectural?
As far as I am concerned, they are. But from the very vigorous diversionary action which Mr. Smith has thought to take this afternoon and evening, I think he probably possessed some certainty in the matter.
Heyho and the woman known as Mrs. Hubin were married at Yatta some 17 years ago. Having this information, together with some knowledge of the matter of Heyho's own legitimacy, I saw the extreme danger of the position and the conclusion to which the police might very readily come. A little clouding of the issue, I thought, might give us time to see where we were.
Hence the theft of Mrs. Ulstrup's cake.
I'm surprised you distinguished my part in the affair so readily. But yes, it was I who set in train the little matter of the witches, with the timely assistance of Charles and Arthur, fortunately still enjoying their winter vacation. If you care to look into the Gladstone bag, I entrust it to Rainbird. You'll find the witch's hat and cloak, which so rattled young William. So, there the matter rests. The newspapers have been successfully headed off. Very soon the Raven family affairs will be completely forgotten and can be quietly adjusted in whatever fashion is proper.
Adjusted? If I understand these revelations aright, they mean that young Hubin is the rightful owner of Dream. It's exactly like one of our father's romances.
This Hannah Hubin's boy, what's he like? John, you've seen him.
I should call him perfectly charming. Is he not a Raven, after all?
Capital. How much in this degenerate century one relishes a compliment well turned.
Oh, capital. The Ravens, or some of them, are charming. But equally, the Ravens and all of them are broke. Indeed, they're about to be turned out into the snow.
I should like to be let take away Theodore's genius guarding the secret of...
We must ask the farmers to return the pig and the cow and the waxwork. Though explanations will be a trifle difficult.
The other day I had a letter asking me if I would undertake a dictionary of universal biography in 40 volumes. I better write at once and accept.
I understand that all this turns upon the supposed marriages of Ranulph and of the man Heyho.
That is so.
Then we may desist from this nonsensical talk and go to bed.
I beg your pardon?
Except Judith and, John. They may remain chatting by the fire. I suggest that they consider taking the Hall Farm. That will be most convenient, I think. On Sundays, we will expect them to take luncheon with us, a dream. I must remember to tell Rainbird.
Clarissa, possibly you're overtired. I suggest that...
I understand you to say, Mr. Smith, that the man Heyho had married the woman now called Mrs. Hubin some 17 years ago.
There can be no doubt of it.
Well, there can be every doubt of it, sir. No legal marriage can then have taken place.
May I ask why?
Mrs. Smith, I fear that you may. 41 years ago tomorrow, I married the man Heyho myself. It is true that I had reason to think better of it a few days later and paid him to be silent. But he died my lawful married husband. Everard, Robert, Luke, you need not stare so. Was he not a Raven after all?
In Appleby's End by Michael Innes, dramatized by Michael Bakewell, the part of Inspector Appleby was played by John Hurt, Everard by John LeMessurier, Clarissa by Joyce Redman, and Judith by Pippa Gard. Inspector Mutlow and Heyho, Christopher Benjamin, Mr. Smith, Trevor Baxter, Colonel Pike, Jack May, Sir Mulberry Farmer and Liddle, Hugh Dixon. Rainbird, John Sharp, Luke, Lewis Stringer, Robert, Anthony Newlands, Mark, Richard Derrington. Billy Bidewell, Christopher Douglas, Gregory Grope, David Goodison, Hannah Hubin's boy, Stephen Garlick, Brettingham Skirl, and Scott, John Livesey. And Pauline Letts played Hannah Hubin, Mrs. Alstrop, and Lady Farmer. Technical presentation by David Greenwood, assisted by Tim Sturgeon and Paul Pearson. The play was directed by Jane Morgan. The play was directed by Jane Morgan.